Hi, good afternoon. My name is Shivir Musai and I'm a haematology registrar working in Birmingham. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Duncan Murray, who is a consultant haematologist working at Universal Hospital Coventry. Dr. Murray has a specialist interest in T-cell lymphomas and occasionally works in the skin lymphoma clinic in central Birmingham. He's also done a PhD in mycosis fungoides, looking at the interaction between the immune system and cancer cells. Today we will be discussing the topic of mycosis fungoides and touching a bit on Sézary syndrome. So welcome, Duncan.
Thanks, Shiv.
So if we sort of just jump straight into it. So what is mycosis fungoides and how does it differ from Sézary syndrome?
So thanks so much for having me on today, Shiv. I'm really glad to be here. Mycosis fungoides is part of an umbrella of diseases known as cutaneous skin lymphomas. So actually quite a lot of other conditions in that umbrella, but mycosis fungoides is the most prevalent of them. On a basic level, it's a cancer of CD4 T cells, although they're not always CD4, but they generally are. It's indolent and it's rare. In terms of how it compares to Sézary, I think traditionally Sézary syndrome used to be seen as a sort of advanced stage of mycosis fungoides, but really that's not so much the case these days, and we do think of them as different entities. Mycosis fungoides was named back in 1800s by someone who described it as a mushroom-like fungal disease, which of course it isn't. But it is primarily a skin issue, whereas Sézary syndrome is primarily a blood condition. I would treat them as separate, really. They're not really similar in the way that we think of SLL and CLL as similar, or follicular and the leukemic form as being similar. Sézary has a much worse prognosis. Whereas some mycosis fungoides, actually the majority of them, often have a pretty good prognosis. So yeah, that's probably a rough summary of mycosis fungoides and where it sits in the sort of skin lymphoma definition and how it relates to Sézary.
Okay. And how would a patient with mycosis fungoides present?
Yeah, so we find that usually they tend to present with a very long history. So many of these patients will have been treated for conditions like eczema or psoriasis for sometimes and quite often decades before they get a diagnosis of lymphoma. That's pretty common, to be honest, and I don't know whether that's because we haven't been able to pick up on the disease with previous biopsies, or whether some conditions like eczema and psoriasis may predispose you to mycosis fungoides. And to be honest, that's something that's going to be very difficult to prove. And I can't think of any studies that have tried to tackle this or can do, because we can only detect so much on the biopsy. So a very small amount of mycosis fungoides cells there is very hard to pick up. And actually what's really interesting about the condition is that for most patients with mycosis fungoides, if you biopsy them and you look at their T cells there, actually the majority of their T cells are regular immune T cells, and that's the case in most mycosis fungoides. So actually our immune infiltrate is usually bigger than the cancer population. So unfortunately, if you get very, very early stage mycosis fungoides, that cancer population gets smaller and smaller to the point where it becomes practically undetectable, even with TCR clonality and with regular histology. And so we do actually have a cohort of patients that we call possible mycosis fungoides, and they sit in this border between eczema and skin lymphoma. They're often followed up, and actually many of the treatments for eczema and early skin lymphoma are actually quite similar, so it's not actually a practical issue. But yeah, in terms of their presentation, they usually have this kind of patch type disease. If you've ever seen it before, it's quite distinctive. Usually a sort of flat patch, which is erythematous, a little bit scaly, quite well demarcated usually. It's got a pretty distinctive appearance. When we're assessing patients, we use the terms patch, plaque, and tumor. That's a way of describing mycosis fungoides. So patch is completely flat, plaque is raised, and tumor are sort of lumpy, essentially lumpy disease in the skin. But actually, they do have different forms as well. So that distinctive, well-demarcated mycosis fungoides is the most common. But you do also see an erythematous form, which is a sort of widespread kind of red rash. But yeah, just to go back to what you asked, how do they present? It's usually with quite a long history of a skin condition dating back for years or decades before.
Okay, thanks, Duncan. So yeah, my limited knowledge of mycosis fungoides is exactly as you said. It can be quite difficult to diagnose, especially in the early stages. What sort of tools for diagnosing mycosis fungoides do you have? You mentioned skin biopsy and sort of TCR clonality testing. Do you mind sort of telling me a bit more about that? So, the diagnosis and staging of mycosis fungoides.
Yeah, absolutely. So the skin biopsy is one of your main investigations. We like to send that off for both histology and TCR and BCR clonality, if you're querying that, with a paired blood TCR and BCR clonality. That's probably our mainstay of diagnosis, but it is really important to mention that skin lymphomas are not diagnosed on a purely histological basis. So don't be surprised if your histologist gives you back a range of differentials from the biopsy, because it is a clinical pathologic correlation. So it very much depends on their clinical course, how it looks like, and that will guide you as to which category it falls into. And obviously that's where you really need a proper skin lymphoma MDT that consists of the right people there. Or everyone that we normally have in our hematology MDT, but also the dermatologists. So that the visual appearance of it is very much part of the classification there and its clinical history. Apart from the skin biopsy, staging CT scan is useful because lymph nodes are often enlarged in mycosis fungoides, and it often isn't due to lymphomatous infiltration. It's usually what we call a dermatopathic node, which means a node that looks like it's near some skin disease. The staging of that is quite complicated. So we do a TNM type staging, which has been extended to a TNMB staging, B for blood. T stage depends on the coverage and whether it's patch or plaque or tumor. N is the nodal stage, but not just whether the nodes are involved, but also whether it's dermatopathic, whether there's some involvement, or whether it's completely effaced, and the clonality results of that as well. M is anything other than the usual places where we find MF, such as visceral areas. And B is how much is there in the blood. Again, it's a little bit complicated. It's divided up into several categories. So we've got skin biopsy, we've got clonality from the biopsies and from the blood. We tend to send the blood for flow cytometry as well, looking for a CD7 negative and CD26 negative population. And then we've also got staging, as well as your usual sort of virology as well. Quite important to check HTLV1 in T-cell lymphoma, as well as the usual HIV and hepatitis. And we also check Borrelia in B-cell skin lymphomas as well. But yeah, that's a sort of brief overview of the kind of workup that we do.
All right. And Duncan, just coming back to Sézary syndrome at this point, because I know you said they're sort of, we're now moving towards a point where we're thinking of them as probably distinct entities. If you had a patient with mycosis fungoides with a peripheral blood involvement, and you did detect that sort of CD7, CD26 negative clonal lymphocytosis, would you at that point still call it mycosis fungoides, you know, at a later stage, or is the current practice to call that a Sézary syndrome?
Yeah, that's a good question, Shiv. To be honest, it can be a little bit difficult to tell. It's one of these things where you have to take everything into account. So there is a, as I said before, there is a type of mycosis fungoides with a erythematous skin, or what we call erythrodermic. That's widespread disease. And we tend to see that in Sézary as well. And erythrodermic mycosis fungoides often has a peripheral blood component as well. To be honest, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule about how we classify it. It's more of a general taking everything in together and having a look. To be honest, if you've got that kind of disease with a peripheral blood involvement, then actually whether you call it mycosis fungoides or Sézary at that point probably doesn't make that much difference. There's quite a lot of overlap in the treatment of mycosis fungoides and Sézary. I think one that I find the most interesting is dermatologists have used UVB and PUVA for a long time with mycosis fungoides, essentially zapping the skin with ultraviolet treatment. And in the case of PUVA, with 8 MOP given beforehand, which can cross-link DNA with UV. And actually, it's quite interesting, the history of that, because of this link between mycosis fungoides and Sézary syndrome, and this being effective in mycosis fungoides, that's how we got ECP treatment, essentially, which was taking, you know, how would we give UV to Sézary syndrome, because it's in the vessels. So of course we take it out and put it on glass, and we do the same thing as we do to the person in PUVA. Yeah, so there is quite a bit of crossover between MF and Sézary. Got more kind of treatments coming along, such as mogamulizumab, the CCR4 antibody, which does tend to work better for blood disease, both in mycosis and Sézary. But yeah, if you're getting to an advanced stage, which you will be if mycosis has got a significant blood component, or it's Sézary, in that case the prognosis is poor, and it's definitely a more aggressive form of disease, managed very differently to early mycosis fungoides, where we tend to go for more skin-directed treatment.
Okay. And is there any consensus on doing a CT versus PET CT?
At the moment, no. We mix it up a little bit, to be honest. My preference is still probably still for a CT scan because it's you get good measurement of size and we can see whether they are enlarged based on size criteria. And actually, they need to go on and have a biopsy done usually if they've got enlarged lymph nodes. And actually what you want from the scan is are they enlarged or not? If they are enlarged, then you're going to have to biopsy them, because as I said before, the lymph nodes are often dermatopathic. So what you're really looking for is there any lymphoma involvement there, and if so, how much is it kind of effacing the lymph node, or is it just a little bit of it? And that really does affect your prognosis with mycosis fungoides. The prognosis is quite different depending on what stage you are. If you've got sort of early limited stage MF, you can actually have a prognosis measured in, you know, sort of up to decades, really. These patients have recurrence of their disease. It's not, as you probably know, it's not a curable condition, but it is manageable, particularly in the earlier stages. And it's quite a nice disease to manage, actually, in the early stages, because you can see it when it comes up and when it goes. You don't need to scan for it. You can see how it responds straight away to treatment. And in actual fact, you often see something which we see in hematology quite a lot, which is that you can get spontaneous regression as well. That's actually quite a common thing in skin lymphoma. So a lot of the time we sometimes just keep an eye on things if they're not causing too much trouble. But yeah, overall, in early stage of mycosis fungoides, patients can have, you know, sort of prognosis measured in years, decades, etc. And particularly for the more elderly populations, they're more likely to die of something other than their skin disease. But there does come a point where a proportion of these patients do go on to progress. It's not all of them. It's probably only about 25% of them. They can develop, you know, lymph nodes, blood involvement, and those are the patients that we tend to see in hematology, unfortunately, because we don't get to manage all of the early stage disease, which are often very well managed by the dermatologists. And in fact, they've got better access to the kind of treatments that they would normally have. In actual fact, I did used to see quite a lot of hematologists accidentally getting hold of early stage mycosis fungoides and seeing T-cell lymphoma in a histology report and just pulling the trigger on CHOP chemotherapy, which that used to happen quite a lot. I haven't seen it so much recently. But yeah, I feel like the dermatologists are often trying to keep those patients away from us in the early stages, and try and manage them with sort of steroid cream, radiotherapy, UVA, etc. But yeah, at some point they then become more advanced. They can present with advanced disease, or they can progress, like I said, in about a quarter of them. And in that case, it's a very different situation, and these patients don't do very well at all. They have a prognosis similar to Sézary, or, you know, to other comparable T cell diseases like ATLL or TPLL. So very bad generally.
Okay. So that's a very useful point, Duncan, because I think a lot of people listening will probably not be familiar with cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. So for most hematologists, I guess working in a DGH, what would be the sort of preferred route of managing mycosis fungoides? So you said early stage disease is usually managed by dermatologists. I mean, would you recommend referring to tertiary center that looks after cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, or would you recommend managing, you know, advanced disease sort of locally? What, you know, you sort of touched on it, but what would be your advice to those working more peripherally?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be a balance, really. I would definitely recommend referring to the regional center. obviously it does depend on whether the patient is able to travel or not. A lot of these patients can be more elderly, but it's very useful to get the patients discussed regionally at the MDT anyway, and you know that can be very helpful to look at the histology and sort of divide them up into what is getting an increasingly complicated sort of classification. But yeah, they don't need, you know, it's not ideal for them to have their treatment at a quaternary center because there are not many of them around. But actually a lot of the treatments available are available in DGHs and local tertiary hospitals, you know, such as radiotherapy or PUVA. So it's usually best if those are delivered jointly and more locally. In terms of when you're going on to chemotherapy, I think this is an area that it's a bit of a tricky area because there's a bit of a handoff between dermatology and hematology there. So there's, you know, the dermatology are fairly familiar with managing these patients in the early stages, and then, you know, we most of us hematologists don't have that experience in the early stages, so then we, you know, can end up with someone who's extremely unwell, and it can be very difficult to manage them. I think in these situations a proper MDT discussion is really helpful between derm and hematology and oncology. I think the first thing to think about is whether you think these patients are transplant eligible or not, because you've got advanced stage disease and you're younger, then really what you're aiming to do is try and get the person to an allogeneic transplant. But, you know, that does depend on the situation. Sometimes chemotherapy plus an autologous stem cell transplant is more appropriate. But again, these are for the fitter patients. Actually, a lot of patients are not in that category. So the more elderly patients who have run out of lines of treatment, skin-directed and systemic treatments, and are then being referred for chemotherapy, those patients, you do have to be quite careful with them. The natural tendency from the referring team will be to push for whatever treatment we're able to give them. But as we know from our experience in managing other hematological malignancies, you do have to be careful with the frailer and elderly population. So, you know, CHOP can be appropriate. Bear in mind brentuximab as well, which can be used in CD30 positive cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. And it doesn't need to be 100% CD30 positive. But again, that's probably best done with a discussion with the local skin lymphoma MDT. And actually, what might be the best for a lot of patients, you know, if they're not going to be a transplant candidate, then essentially what you're doing is palliative treatment. And in that case, CHOP is quite heavy-handed and possibly not really that effective. So, you know, other alternatives such as weekly gemcitabine is probably a preferable option in that situation in the palliative setting.
Okay, thanks, Duncan. So touching on management there. So as you said, about a quarter of patients with mycosis fungoides may progress, and these are the ones that you will probably find being looked after by hematologists. In terms of early and advanced stage, so you mentioned, you know, TNMB sort of classification, and from that you get, correct me if I'm wrong, early stage and advanced stage. And is it stage sort of 2B onwards? Is that advanced stage? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of ballpark right. It's a little bit complicated because you've got the TNMB staging, which has got a lot of categories in itself. And then that translates over to the clinical stage, which is what you're referring to, which is the stage that we're more familiar with, which is stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, etc. And those are subclassified as well. But yeah, essentially, you're looking when you start to get patients with tumor stage disease, with effaced lymph nodes, with a high level of blood involvement, you know, with any organs involved outside of the skin and the blood, then that's when it's really advanced stage. But you're right, you can find some quite useful prognostic curves based on their clinical stage, and you can kind of see which ones are not so good. Probably at 2B and onwards, you're getting a poorer prognosis there.
And you mentioned treatments for early stage disease, and usually sort of this would be directed by the dermatology team, so sort of topical treatments and PUVA and so on. And then you were mentioning treatments for advanced stage disease, and obviously, as with any patient, you would sort of have a truly MDT approach, especially for mycosis fungoides. You said, if they fit enough allogeneic stem cell transplant, then that would be the route if appropriate. You mentioned CHOP, weekly gemcitabine. Is there any sort of, when would sort of CHOP, I guess, be more appropriate than weekly gemcitabine? And are there any other chemotherapy options that you would consider?
Just to rewind a little bit, we've probably left out a large sort of the middle chunk of treatments for mycosis fungoides. So you got your kind of skin directed treatments such as radiotherapy, PUVA, electron beam, steroid cream as well, and chlormethine gel as well. So those are your more kind of skin directed. When that becomes not so great to use, or people have more extensive disease but they aren't really what we'll call advanced stage, that's when we start looking at systemic type treatments, things like bexarotene, the retinoid, interferon, ECP as well, particularly if they've got blood involvement or their Sézary. Triple therapy is actually bexarotene, interferon, and ECP. And also HDAC inhibitors are available as well. So those are sort of the bulk of the kind of slightly more than just skin directed treatments. When you go beyond that, then like you say, it's very much an MDT decision and a think about where they are heading. In terms of CHOP versus gemcitabine, I don't think there's any evidence for starters to discriminate between the two of them. The thing about skin lymphoma is it's, like I said at the beginning, your immune system plays a really strong role there. So unfortunately, treatments that really hammer your immune system never really work that well, and that's what chemotherapy does. It wipes out both your immune system and the malignant cells, but that kind of just resets it somewhat. So yeah, if you want to use CHOP, it's probably more if you're trying to go for some kind of CR, essentially.
Okay.
But yeah, I would stick to gemcitabine for the more palliative patients.
Okay. And then you did mention earlier mogamulizumab as a fairly novel agent. When would you think of using mogamulizumab, and what sort of setting? Is this more a sort of a relapse type treatment?
There are a couple of trials open at the moment using mogamulizumab, and it's licensed. So I ideally try and get them onto a trial to collect that useful data. But yes, it is licensed, I think it's second line in Sézary. And it's also very good in mycosis fungoides if they've got a blood component. So yeah, it does tend to work better for patients with a significant blood component. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Duncan. So you've covered quite a bit, and I'd like to sort of end with a clinical case. So you have a 52-year-old female who presents with an 18-month history of patches and plaques involving the limbs and pelvic area. A diagnosis of mycosis fungoides has been made based on the clinical pathologic features. She's been treated initially with phototherapy and then subsequently develops an ulcerated tumor on the wrist, and a biopsy shows an infiltrate of sort of medium-sized pleomorphic T cells. A PET is normal apart from some uptake within the skin tumor, and she responds well to radiotherapy and PUVO and has a treatment stopped after 5 months because she's doing well. Now, 4 years later, she presents with difficulty swallowing an axillary lymphadenopathy, and a PET shows an FDG avid mass in the oropharynx and the axilla. And the biopsy confirms a high-grade lymphoma with an identical clone to that in the skin. You know, how would you manage a patient like this?
Yeah, so yeah, this is, you know, an unfortunate case, but exactly the kind of patients that end up being referred to hematology. So yeah, I think what's interesting about this case is that if you're looking at ulcerated tumors and a CD30 positive disease, you might actually be looking at something different to mycosis fungoides. You do see CD30 positive transformed mycosis fungoides, but this could be more of a primary cutaneous anaplastic large cell lymphoma. And in that situation, sort of keeping an open mind as well about whether it can be a bit difficult to tell the difference between primary cutaneous and systemic anaplastic large cell lymphoma. You know, both of them can have skin and lymph node involvement. It can be a little bit tricky to work out which started where. On the whole, for the primary cutaneous form, it tends to be ALK negative. But yeah, at this stage, you know, someone with this kind of advanced disease, you're probably managing it in a similar way to your systemic anaplastic large cell lymphomas now. I mean, you can, I'm just trying to think here, in terms of funding, you technically can't use brentuximab and CHP like we do with systemic anaplastic large cell lymphoma up front. But I probably see a little bit of, you know, sometimes there might be some convenience in the MDT to help with that. But otherwise, you've got brentuximab available and CHOP, so you could use brentuximab after CHOP. And yeah, there's probably not really, you know, much like in regular lymphoma practice, what your opinion is on an autologous stem cell transplant is a bit debatable, whether you try and do that upfront or if they relapse. Yeah, I think, you know, that this is quite a typical case, but I think probably at this point, these patients end up getting managed a bit like our regular hematology patients. They, you know, we essentially ruled out skin-directed treatments and the more systemic mycosis treatments at this point. So yeah, it would be systemic chemotherapy, usually involving brentuximab, and making sure that we've got, that we think we've got this diagnosis right. We're not muddling up transformed mycosis fungoides and anaplastic large cell.
All right, thanks for that, Duncan. And one more question I forgot to ask. Is there any rule for doing a bone marrow biopsy when it comes to staging patients?
It's a good question. We don't tend to do it in cutaneous T-cell lymphoma because it's usually quite, it's not usually necessary. There is a caveat, and that is in some cutaneous B-cell lymphomas, we may recommend it because in a proportion of those, there can be a higher incidence of bone marrow disease, but generally not for CTCL.
All right. Well, thanks a lot today for this enlightening talk on mycosis fungoides and Sézary syndrome. It's been very, very useful. And I know our listeners will find it useful in their day-to-day practice when they come across mycosis fungoides. Please stay tuned for more podcasts from the BSH Lymphoma Special Interest Group. Thank you.
Thank you, Shiv.